SBS Radio. Wadamuli and welcome to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee Harding, and coming up for you now, it's that time of the week again where we get to yarn all things science and technology with Wiradjuri woman and journalist Ray Johnston. Welcome back to the program this week, Ray.
Thanks for having me back, Sis.
Lovely to have you back again. We've got a number of things to get through on the segment today. But first up, the Stolen Generation still have worse health outcomes than the wider First Nations population. What can you tell us about this story, Sis?
Yeah, so this information comes from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare's 2018 to 2019 update, which was commissioned by the Healing Foundation. And it shows 40% of Stolen Generations members over 50 years of age have poor mental health compared to 3% for the general Indigenous population. 15% have experienced or been threatened with harm in the past year, which is almost double the rate of those not part of the Stolen Generations. And the report found that health risks like smoking and substance abuse were also higher for members of the Stolen Generation. And more than 27,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people aged 50 years and over are survivors of the Stolen Generations and facing a lot of socioeconomic challenges. You know, this report has shown that 71% are relying on government payments as the main source of income, 66% don't own a home, 63% are living in households where they don't have access to emergency funds, and 43% have had days without money for basic living expenses in the last year. So the Healing Foundation says that this report, it gives us important information about the gap within the gap and the difference in health and well-being outcomes between Stolen Generation survivors and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who were not removed. And this information is going to be hugely beneficial as we work towards healing for Stolen Generation survivors and descendants as well.
Now we go from talking about Stolen Generations to meeting Australia's largest dinosaur. And did you know I just love dinosaurs, Ray?
I love dinosaurs too, and I'm excited to introduce you to a new one. Well, not new, it's, you know, 96 million years old, but it's new for us. So it's called the Australotitan cooperensis, and it's just dumped into the record books as the continent's largest dinosaur. It's a new species of giant sauropod dinosaur from southwest Queensland, and it's known as the Southern Titan. That's what Australotitan means. And it's been what they call scientifically described and named by Queensland Museum and Erromanga Natural History Museum paleontologists. And it's estimated to have reached a height of 6.5 metres at the hip and 25 to 30 metres in length, which sits it within the top 10 to 15 largest dinosaurs ever worldwide. So it's a big one. And you know, to make sure that Australotitan was actually a different species, scientists needed to compare its bones to the bones of other species from the area and also globally. And this took a really long time. It took 17 years to actually work out that this is a different species of dinosaur. And you know, dinosaur bones are enormous and heavy and fragile, and they're kept in museums, you know, sometimes hundreds to thousands of kilometres apart. So this makes scientific study of them pretty tricky. So for the first time, this team used new digital technology to 3D scan each bone of the Australotitan and compared them to bones of its closest relatives. And those scans themselves, they're now going to be part of the museum's digital collection. So it's really exciting.
What a lovely story to talk about on our science and technology segment. Now we go from talking about Australia's largest dinosaur to talking about trees. And apparently southeast Queensland's eucalypt trees can provide everything from medicines to tools, Sis. How so?
Yeah, so this is information that's, you know, been known in the area, you know, since we've ever been in the area. But what's special about this research is that this is the first time that it's been recognised by Western science, which means it can form part of our education in the area. So Southeast Queensland's eucalypt trees, yeah, they can provide everything, medicines, tools. This is according to rediscovered records of regional Indigenous knowledge, which has been verified in the area. So the University of Queensland researchers, they looked at information from a 1957 interview with Garibal, who is a Gungadal man known as Willie McKenzie as well, and also the journals of a German explorer, Ludwig Leichhardt, who travelled with Aboriginal people through the region in the mid-19th century. So the researchers, they did verify information from those interviews and from those journals with community members, and said that they were blown away by the versatility of eucalyptus in that southeast corner. So it was used and is still used today for utensils, dyes, medicine, chewing gum, fish traps, embalming, smoke signalling, of course, and also playing a role in the bush calendar. And looking even specifically at the iron barks, they contain life-saving water, which is also an appetite suppressant, and the gum from some species can also be used to treat a toothache. And universities haven't published this knowledge before. It's just not been taken into consideration. So this will really deepen the scientific study and understanding going forward in these institutions. So it's a big step forward.
A great story to yarn about today with you, Sis. Now we go from talking about eucalypt trees from southeast Queensland to yarning about animals, and red foxes are apparently feasting on Australian mammals, which I'm not happy to hear about.
No, so the fox, it was introduced to this continent about 150 years ago. And within 30 years of its introduction, it was already being recognised as a threat to native wildlife. And the fox has already contributed to the extinction of 14 native mammal species and a bird species. So scientists at Murdoch University's Harry Butler Institute, they've looked into it further, and they've discovered that red foxes are eating a much larger range of animals than we previously realised. 70% of the fox diet is turning up mammal remains. So this research shows a really major shift, actually, in the fox diet over the last 70 years in particular. They've switched to eating more native species since we've started controlling rabbit numbers better. Mm. They used to eat a lot more rabbits. So the researchers are now saying that the fox is one of the greatest threats to our native fauna. And we need to be looking at greater fox control, especially around urban bushland reserves where native species like possums and bandicoots, they make up a huge chunk of the fox's diet. And it's also showing that population control of foxes and feral cats and rabbits, they need to be all carried out at the same time, because removing any one of these species by itself, that's when we're seeing this massive imbalance with the diets of these predators, and it has a huge impact on the native wildlife. So some really important research with how we deal with these, you know, feral animals in the future.
Not good news what those red foxes are getting up to feasting on Australian mammals, Sis?
No, not at all. And I think, you know, discovering that they used to eat a lot more rabbits and now they're not anymore because we're getting better at dealing with the rabbit population, that just highlights how we need to be doing all of these things in balance. So having this research is really, really good and really important moving forward, even though the content of it is quite sad.
Absolutely, Sis. Well, that's about all for today for our science and technology segment with Wiradjuri woman and journalist Ray Johnston. Thank you so much for your time again today, Sis. Lovely having you here.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.